at the Rising Billions. Disrupting tradition.
Always be closing.
Gaining exponential wisdom from street smart strategies.
I dream the kind of dreams that other people said would not be possible.
Free your mind. Nothing happens till something moves.
I'm a big fan of going all in on your strengths.
Create your blue ocean. Innovation and collaboration with competition.
Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world?
Creating uncontested market space.
I worry that people don't tap into their strengths.
Wealth creation and a new economy entrepreneur.
There is a very thin dividing line between success and failure.
Witnessing unprecedented technology.
You can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the Think Bold, Be Bold Show with Christopher Cumby and Alan Witch.
Hi, it's Christopher Cumby with Think Bold, Be Bold, and my awesome co-host, Alan Witch. Alan, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks for asking. How is it in your neck of the woods?
Neck of the woods is actually pretty good. Again, the sun is always shining behind the clouds. That's what I like to say.
Well, now, it's always sunny here if you look between the raindrops.
There you go. Now, we, Alan, are fortunate enough to have, this guest I'm super excited about because, we found each other through Twitter. And, you know, what a great resource when you really look at it from a social media side of things. And, you know, some people said Twitter's on its way out. And, you know, listen, I think people directly connect with that really quickly. And you know, this guest today certainly, you know, did. And I love it because it's something we can find great guests and bring them on to our show. And that's what it's all about. And we're getting a lot of requests from, you know, other people that want to, you know, have certain people on the show. And right now, you know, this book that we're going to talk about today, and I'm going to give you the pleasure of introducing Alan, because this book is something that, you know, again, I believe is a pot of gold. And we have the fortune of, you know, talking to one of the co-authors today. And, you know, like I said, it's going to be something, we're going to extract the genius out of the, you know, the author, but mostly, you know, again, what the book's doing and things like that. But I always like to, you know, ask some good questions during our show to make sure that, we have some genius to pass on to people, whether you're, you know, an entrepreneur in a career, you know, doing nothing, which I don't think a lot of our listeners are in that boat, but, you know, are you stuck? You know, things like that. And I think, you know, there's always this little golden nugget that comes out of the show. And I know based on the comments and the things we get back from people, you know, really change their life in a lot of ways and motivate them and inspire them. So on that note, Alan, why don't you take it away and introduce our awesome guest today?
Thanks, Chris. You know, it's a pleasure in this time in our society to be able to have the connectivity that we have. You know, we're all three sitting in, a comfortable place in our hometown, in different parts of the country. And I look back as a young kid and realize that the only way for that were to happen was if I was, some kind of a well-known public figure and be on television. But now we get to be able to sit here and use technology to really bring value, not only to our immediate group, but to, you know, spheres outside of our own circles of influence. And this gentleman we're bringing on this morning, who's sitting right here and who I'm looking at through our monitor here, has done a great job of edifying other people and spending a life putting others' goals and needs and offerings ahead of his own, and talking about the necessity of being honest and true and really adding value to somebody else's life when it's a really easy thing to do, you know, and to touch lives and to build networks, you know, of people from those lives that you touch. And what does that really mean? And to be real and to be visible and most importantly relatable, you know, and then to always be a student, to stay open, and then to transfer that material and that concept and that philosophy and business and life to the people that follow him. And it's an amazing concept that he's been able to bring in, and his success has been fantastic. He's a bestseller, global bestseller. Probably best known for one of his books more than the other, and that book is The Go-Giver. So yes, I probably just gave it away, but in the house today we have Mr. Bob Berg. Bob, welcome.
Bob Berg's in the house.
Alan and Christopher, thank you both, and what a nice introduction. Thank you so much.
Well, you're
most welcome.
Yes, for sure, and we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy life and sharing with the audience. And, you know, let's kick it off, because I always like to ask the question so, you know, we can start off with, you know, Bob, you had an interesting career, but I want to know where you started, because I think that is always interesting. And then most importantly, in order, where you are now and then where you're going, because, you know, again, you're larger than life to some people. And I think that it's always important to see that people like yourself are setting goals and setting things in the future and where you're going. So, you know, on that note, maybe you can share with our audience what's going on.
Well, career-wise, I actually began in broadcasting. I started first in radio and then in television. I was the I ended up being the late-night news guy for a very small ABC affiliate in the Midwest. Unfortunately, or fortunately, because things work out for the best, I really wasn't very good at it, and I wasn't really long for that business, and I graduated into sales. The challenge with sales for me was that I didn't know anything about it, and the training at the company I started with wasn't very good, so it was actually non-existent. I didn't say it wasn't good. It wasn't good or bad. It wasn't there at all, and so I floundered for a few months until I was in a bookstore one day and came across a book that now is a classic. This is 35 years ago, so it was just, I think it was just, had just hit the bestsellers list at the time, called How to Master the Art of Selling by Tom Hopkins. Again, it's now a classic. And I remember having hope just through the title, How to Master the Art of Selling. So what is that? There's an art to this? There's something about this more than just knocking on doors, being nice, and trying, you know. And so within a few weeks of really, really studying, putting into practice what he was talking about, my sales began to really, they went through the roof. I mean, they became really good. And which is interesting to me, because it taught me a big lesson, and that is, first, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. The wheel has already been invented, so if you want to learn how to do something, find other people who have done it and study them and learn from them. It also said to me that when you have a system for doing something, you're much more likely to be successful, and much more likely to be successful a lot faster. I personally define a system as the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. In other words, the key is predictability. Mm-hmm. If it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired result of B, then you know that all you need to do is A and continue to do A, and eventually you're going to get the desired results of B. And mm-hmm. So that was really... my first experience. It probably wasn't my first experience following a system, because anything you learn is, but it was that first experience in the real world of coming to an understanding that systems were there and systems were available to us. We simply needed to seek them out, learn them, apply the information, and then be willing, of course, to be persistent and couple that with a belief in what we're doing. And when you do that, you've got to be successful. And, you know, eventually I became sales manager of a different company, started teaching it to sales to others, and it sort of morphed into a speaking career, which I've been doing now for over 25 years and having a real lot of fun with it.
That's fantastic. So that's where you are now, and, you know, where you were. And I love sales, because I've been a sales guy, commissioned for, you know, a lot of my life. And, you know, it even started off with little money-making machines when I was a kid, you know, even at the age of 8 years old, you know, delivering
papers. Good for you.
You know, and I learned the art of, actually what I teach is utilizing the art of journaling. And I learned the skill of journaling to enhance my career as a salesperson. Because remembering things, you know, And it's said by science that, you know, we might have something like 80,000 thoughts a day. So how do you sift through all that? Mm-hmm. And for me, my journal has always been something that, you know, has helped me. Now, Bob, where's your future lie? What's going on, you know, there in your mind? And what are some of the things that you can share with the audience today that maybe, you know, again, inspires them or motivates them, you know, because again, you're set. I know you set goals because that's, you know, how you've advanced in your career and you became successful. Can you share that, you know, vision?
Well, aside from continuing to promote the book, The Go-Giver,
right?
And there's another book that's very dear to my heart called Adversaries into Allies, which is about how to become a powerful influencer. In a way that, and very persuasive in a way that makes other people feel genuinely good about themselves. So those are, those are sort of my two things I'll continue to do. I don't ever see stopping doing that because I believe so much in the message itself.
Right.
My business partner, Kathy Tajanel, and I, we began about 2 or 3 years ago, a, certified Go-Giver speaker program where, people get the rights to speak and teach on all my, for lack of a better term, intellectual properties. Right. Hard to think of myself as having intellectual properties, but I guess that's what they are. And so, you know, we teach them how to speak on these topics, how to know everything about them, and how to market themselves as professional speakers. And so this is something we've been building and will continue to grow. And this is really where our heart really lays, because we just... there's just so many unbelievably great people coming into this program who love speaking on the topic. They use the principles of the Go-Giver in their business. They've been very successful, and now they want to begin a speaking career and kind of spread the message themselves. So that's really what we're continuing to do. We also just came out along with Randy Stelter, who's a high school English teacher, who's been teaching the principles of the book to his students pretty much since the book first came out. He, along with John David Mann and myself, put together a curriculum guide for teachers. And
that's
fantastic.
And
it's just now starting to work its way into all these different school systems. And we love the idea of kids learning entrepreneurship, kids learning how to take responsibility for providing value to others, to the marketplace, and, you know, all the principles that we believe can help our future leaders. So all of these things are just a joy to go after and to work with. And, you know, fortunately, I have a great business partner in Kathy Tajanel, who has so many amazing strengths that I don't have, which frees me up to do the things I do best. And a co-author such as John David Mann, who's such a genius. So, you know, and a whole team that really we work to, you know, to hopefully add value to the lives of a lot of people. So that's kind of what we're continuing to do.
Well, I think you're doing a great job of that. And it's amazing.
Thank you.
The Go-Giver. And we're going to talk about the book because I think it's important. And I just want to go back to sales for a minute because, you know, you break paradigms and specifically about sales.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on that?
Sure. Sure. It's really one of my favorite topics because I love sales. I love the very concept of selling and what it represents. Sales is what makes things happen. It brings ideas to the marketplace. It improves people's lives. It creates wealth for an entire country when sales upmanship through free enterprise is allowed to happen. But what happens is selling has in itself, as you know, kind of a lousy reputation. And much of that is because what people think of as being sales really isn't sales. And let me explain what I mean, if I may. People, I think, a lot of times see sales or selling as being trying to convince someone to buy something that they don't want or need. that's not selling. That's called being a con artist.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with selling. Sales is really, I personally define selling as simply discovering what a person needs, wants, or desires and helping them to get it. That's what selling is. You know, often people think selling is about taking advantage of others. It's not. It's about giving people more advantage through your products and services when these products and services are appropriate for that person. Probably the biggest upside-down misperception about selling is that at its heart, it's about taking, but it isn't. It's just the opposite. Selling at its utmost, selling at its most profitable, selling at its highest is all about giving. And I mean that actually literally. Now, some might think, no, you don't mean it literally, you mean it figuratively. Selling is about giving. No, I mean it literally, because if you look back, the old English root of the word sell was selan, which meant to give. So when you're selling, you're literally giving. Now, someone might ask, well, isn't that just semantics? And I would say that I don't believe it is semantics, and here's the reason why. Let's say you are in a selling situation. Again, you are presenting your product or service to a person who's there to decide if this is correct for them or not. So you are selling. When you are selling, what exactly are you giving? I suggest you're giving time, attention, counsel, education, empathy, and most of all, value. So when we look at selling as being this, now we can be very proud of what we're doing. And we understand what an important role selling has to do with wealth creation and value creation for everyone.
Right. Right.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You're talking about adding a tremendous amount of value, Bob, up front, you know, in a non-expectant way. And it reminds me of when I co-owned an insurance agency a number of years ago. I taught and coached and trained the agents that they really can't sell the insurance. The customer has to buy it. And they didn't really know what that, they didn't understand that. And to know, for those that don't know about insurance, the agents actually cannot, you know, make a sale transaction. The client has to actually apply for it. But the job of the sales team is to, like you said, educate, mm-hmm. to be honest and upfront, to find out truly what is needed by the client, mm-hmm. not necessarily to promote your bag of goodies and to try to find out what small cash they have, stuff that you have that's going to be able to benefit somebody. But what can you truly do intrinsically as a human being with what tools you have to really, truly add value to these people and put them in a better position than before they met you. And I think that's a fantastic way to not only live your life, but to prosper in business and to be able to move forward. And you talked about your new program of working, you know, with youth. And Chris and I were just talking about that yesterday, is taking some of these philosophies and really making sure they're part of curriculum for kids, mm-hmm. when they're younger. Could you imagine the value transfer that's going to happen?
Right.
And, you know, I guess as you've worked up to the level that you're at, you know, and the success that you've had and the philosophies that you now use, what was the one time when kind of that light bulb went off that said, I need to be an entrepreneur and to be able to take the philosophies that I know, that I have, that I know that work, and then teach those to other people? Was there a one particular event or a part in your life where that light bulb just kind of went off?
Well, I think entrepreneurism has pretty much been in my blood, but there was a time when the light really went off and the bell really rang early in my sales career, which probably made the biggest difference to me and to the people whose lives I'd be able to touch after that. And it was when I was working for a company, one of my first sales jobs, and I came back from what I will call a non-selling appointment. But it wasn't intentionally a non-selling appointment. It was non-selling because I didn't do a very good job of communicating the benefits of the product or service and how it would help this person. And I remember kind of coming back into the office and being very angry that this that the prospect didn't get it, right? As though it was his responsibility to get it, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the people at the office, he was an older guy who was just about to retire. I think I'd maybe come across him one other time, and I don't remember seeing him any time after this, but he gave me a wonderful piece of advice. I call this person a drive-by mentor because I only, you know, had this conversation with him this one time. It's not something where I ever established a relationship with him. It just happened to be that he came by with some, he drove by in a sense, figuratively, with some wonderful advice that I'm just very thankful I was willing to receive at that time. And he said to me, you know, Berg, because I think he saw me as an up-and-comer, but who really needed an attitude adjustment, sort of like Joe, the protagonist in The Go-Giver. And he said to me, Berg, he said, if you want to make a lot of money in business, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as the target. Your target is serving others. Now, he said, when you hit the target, you'll get a reward. That reward will be money, and you can do with that money whatever you please. But never forget, he said, that the money is not the target. The money is simply the reward for hitting the target. Your target is serving others. And to me, that made a huge difference because, and I often say this when I speak at a sales conference, it's the first thing I'll say, not the first thing, but one of the first things I say is, you know, nobody is going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. Right. They're not going to buy from you because you need the money, and they're not going to buy from you even because you legitimately think your product or service is fantastic and that they would benefit by it. They're only going to buy from you because they believe that they are better off by doing so than by not doing so. And that's the way it should be, by the way. This is why free enterprise always helps the consumer. And so many people don't understand this. The more free people are to buy, sell, and trade as they desire, the more this helps the consumer. The consumer is ultimately the boss, okay? They don't have to buy from you. And so the only way we are going to be much more effective as salespeople is by totally taking the focus off ourselves. Moving what we call moving from an I focus or me focus to an other focus. Always looking for ways to bring value to them. And the only way we're going to be able to do this is by asking questions that help discover what they want, what they need, what they desire, and then tying in the benefits of our product or service to what will benefit them. This Absolutely. Is why we, yeah, and this is why we say that money is simply an echo of value.
Right.
It's the thunder, if you will, to value's lightning, which simply means the value must be your focal point. The value comes first, and the money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you provide. This is what we call doing business, you know, the go-giver way. It's that focus on the other person, not as some self-sacrificial type of doormatty thing. No, not at all. It's the way business is done right, and it's the way business is done most profitably.
I couldn't agree
perfect.
More.
Yeah, perfect. A great extension. You know, the more you, the literally the more you give, the more you get. You know, in historically in business, that hasn't been the way it is. And being transparent and being relatable is, you know, been considered a lot in the past as being, you know, negative and being, you know, bad business practice and bad character. But in reality, like you said, it's the exact opposite. And the more transparent, the more you can give, then the more good that you'll extend. And by, you know, the law of reciprocity, the more you'll be compensated with whatever that compensation might be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. And, you know, you said something back, and I made a note of that, around the root word, you know, of sales. And, you know, that, you know, it goes back and it's giving. Now, you know, I'm a big fan of root words. I think they hold power, and it gets lost over translation of time. And I think that most importantly, you know, and one of the things I teach the people I mentor is when they actually create the image of themselves, it's so important to know what the root word of the images or the words they describe themselves as. Mm. And, you know, when you brought it up, I wanted to come back to that and you know, ask you, you know, when you describe or use words, you know, as powerful as they are, is this a something that you do and look back at this, you know, various words and look at the roots and really understand them?
Well, I'm a very big believer in defining one's terms. Okay, when using a word, really making sure we understand what it means. I remember that Ayn Rand said, and I'm paraphrasing her slightly, so please forgive me, but she says, even the best logic, if based on a false premise, can never result in a correct conclusion.
There you go.
And so because we all come from our own basic belief systems based on a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television, movie, popular culture, you know, we can look at a word and have 10 different people can have 10 different meanings. And so that's why there are so many there's so much miscommunication. So I'm always defining terms. Now, a lot of times I do love looking up and seeing what that word means, but who's great at that is John David Mann, my co-author.
Right.
He is totally an etymologist. I mean, this guy is absolutely, you know, you can ask him about a word, he'll say, oh yeah, well, that comes from the Greek and Roman, you know, circa, you know, and give you, he's just amazing. So I don't go quite that deep into it, but I love looking up words that I use looking at seeing their roots, what they really mean, what they meant. Then take the word, for example, character. Character comes from an old Greek word for scrape or scratch.
Right.
Now, it came to mean an engraved marking and eventually a defining quality. So you think of that, you know, a scrape or scratch, it etched itself into you, right? You know, it became part of you. It became a defining quality. To me, that's just absolutely fascinating.
And I agree for sure. Thanks for sharing that. I'm always interested in who, you know, you follow, or better yet, some of your favorite mentors or people that you've been involved in. Over your, you know, career is, you know, growing and so forth. You know, is there a favorite author that you, you know, seem to gravitate to? You know, I certainly do. And now meeting you, Bob, I can't wait to read these books because I had a chance to, you know, dive in. And you know, you're giving away the first chapter of the book you just mentioned, Adversaries into Allies. And I can't wait to read that and certainly buy that book. But,
Thank you.
You know, around the author side or favorite mentors or coaches that really influenced you, you know, while you're, you know, growing your career.
You know, there are so many. Certainly, you know, Tom Hopkins was one. Zig Ziglar is someone who I came to really, you know, study and learn from. And, you know, people like Brian Tracy, just such class, wonderful people with great information. There are people like Nito Cobain. You know, people who are mentors of mine now include people like Dondi Scumaci, who's a fantastic speaker on leadership. Dan Rockwell, who writes the Leadership Freak blog post.
Right.
He's just amazing. You've got people like Andrea Waltz, who with her husband Richard Fenton wrote the great book Go For No, which talks about how to reframe the word no. I mean, there's so many people out there, and I love to learn from them. I love studying about salesmanship, entrepreneurship, free markets. I love reading, you know, philosophy. It's just fun to learn from the so many amazing resources there are out there.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And, you know, just learning to be teachable along that journey is such an important trait, you know, as you're transitioning through life and changing. And, well, you know, Bob, I'd love you to read my book. I'll get it off to you. And
good. I look forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. And let me know what you think. But
hey, I'll tell you another person right now, another salesperson to read.
Sure.
This guy has really become one of my, probably my favorite in terms of sales knowledge. And there, his name is Anthony Iannarino. He's spelled Iannarino. He has thesalesblog.com.
Nice.
And this guy is absolutely amazing, fantastic, and just high ethics and character. And I know he's coming out with a book in, I think, September of 2016. And I'll tell you, he is absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. And
yeah, salesblog.com.
We'll have to get Anthony on the show as well. that's always a goal of Alan and myself when we find and you know, interesting people, and certainly great recommendations. So thanks for sharing that, for sure. Alan, what do you got for Bob here? Where are we going to bring Bob next?
Yeah, I'm listening, Bob, to all that you're talking about and kind of your journey along the way and the nuggets of gold that you've been able to develop on your own and the ones that you've been able to glean from those that you follow and your mentors and the people that have had an impact on your life. And so many times those challenges and those goals and those results came from maybe some dark places or some time in your life when it was really challenging. When you look back and you see the mud and, you know, some of the scars and the bumps and the bruises, and, you know, success is always nice, and people always go, oh, look at that person. They've succeeded. They've become this or they've become that. But I think the person that has that success, you know, contributes a lot of that to their challenges and their roadblocks and how they overcame that. So I guess on that note, is there, you know, one particular time in the past where you were really not necessarily down and out, but had a significant roadblock, you know, kind of a crossroads where you had to decide which way you were going to go and if you were going to go?
Well, yeah. I mean, these are what I call turning points. These are those mm-hmm. those instances that happen that kind of make you come to a decision that you're either going to take that yucky thing that happened and you're going to either, you know, you're going to turn it into something good, but you're going to keep going despite it, not because of it. And you're going to turn mm-hmm. it into something good. You're going to keep going, breaking past that, or you're not, or you're going to stop or go in another direction or not. And there's certainly been those times. I agree with you. I think anyone who achieves any kind of significant success had to go through those. And often it was one thing, okay? But and many times it was a combination of things. It was, mm-hmm. you know, Seth Godin wrote that great book, The Dip, if you remember mm-hmm. that. And it was mm-hmm. about, yep. right? And life is a series of dips. I mean, you go into the dip, you come out of the dip, and so forth. What you hope to do is learn from your failures and build on your small successes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that failure you can learn from. I can't think of a failure that you can't learn from if you're willing to take responsibility and not try to put the blame on somebody else or on other circumstances. And you can, so you can learn from it, but it's also just important to build on your small successes. Now, one thing that, you know, I'd like to bring up if I may, and it's when we talk about the failures, which I think is always a good thing to talk about, by the way, because it's good for people to know that, yeah, everyone fails, you know, right. on the way to success.
Sure. It's everybody's been there,
right? Now, what's interesting is I think in the field of personal development, which all three of us are, you know, certainly involved in, just by the nature of what we do, there's almost a what I call a political correctness of in the personal development field to speak glowingly of those failures in terms of, oh, I'm so glad, you know, when something bad happens to me, I don't feel bad about it. I think it's great because this is going to be fantastic because I'm going to take, you know what? Some people may be, well, you know, they may be far enough in their advancement as a human being to think that way, but not with me. When I go through a failure, something bad happens, I don't like it a bit. I don't immediately say to myself, this is great, wow, you know, I can't wait till I overcome this so I can look back on what I learned. No, I struggle through it. Okay, I don't like it. I wish it didn't happen. Sometimes my attitude's not great about it. I don't embrace it until I do. You know what I'm saying? Until Absolutely. That certain point where you say, okay, that, and again, embracing it doesn't mean you're glad or that you feel good about it or that you're, no, it just means that you come to grips with it. You realize that the truth is what counts. And until you deal with what is, and until you deal with the truth, you're not going to be able to climb out of it and go to that next level and build on that next success, get to that next success you can build on. So, you know, when someone says to me that they're going through, you know, something really horrible, you know, I feel bad for them and with them, and encourage them. That it's going to, but, you know, I don't say to them, well, you should be glad about this because, you know, and so I think it's there's a fine line between that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. And it's, and you really can't move forward until you do deal with it. You can sidestep it, but you have to figure out a way to deal with it and to either answer the question or, you know, to change it into something else more positive, but to be able to deal with it and put it behind you, and that it's okay to deal with it and put it behind you, mm-hmm. I think is a big piece. And it sounds like that's a philosophy and a process that you not only use, but you teach.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, we all go through things, and I agree, and I think one of the challenges that people have, and to your point, Bob, is, you know, at you took the time to go through it, but you also thought about it and you pondered it, and I think that's an important step to go through, and a lot of people miss and they don't step back and they don't think, and they don't think on their own mostly. They allow others to, you know, cast upon them opinion, and, you know, then it brings them down another road, and then the, you know, issue or the challenge becomes bigger. And I think a lot of times when you can take that, like you said, responsibility, you're able to internalize it and then, you know, look at ways, especially for, you know, people that are going forward in life and you know, are go-getters and know that, hey, listen, it's just a pivot. I have to change something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And most times it's something about myself, not the outer world. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that. And, you know, I think that you guys would agree. But when you're looking at, you know, these big challenges, and I'm sure, you know, for the audience and listeners, you know, people that are stuck, because I always like to, you know, really cast upon, you know, one idea and something, again, that you can give them, you know, for wherever they are right now in a position of being stuck or something challenging right now. You know, what kind of, let's say, little gold nugget can you give people, you know, that may be in that, you know, right now? And I think that, you know, that would be a good thing to talk about.
Well, I think in a sense it comes down to first know where you are. You know, come to the acknowledge the truth of the situation. You know, it's only once we acknowledge something that we're in a position to be able to do something about it. Then make the decision. The decision is, I'm going to get past this. I'm going to get through this. Okay. Now you start asking yourself the knowledge questions. What do I need to do to get through this? How can I best get through this? Whose advice can I utilize to help me get through this? Maybe someone who's been there and done that and can guide me. You know, what tools do I have to be able to get through this? So I think that's, you know, I think that's a big part of it too. And then once you know the answer, now you start doing it.
Great. Thank you for that. So you heard it from Bob. I mean, Bob had to go through some things as well. We had to go through some things, and I agree 100% with that answer. So thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure.
So Bob, you have some principles, and you know, inside your book, and you call them the 5 laws of stratospheric success. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Sure. Well, first, you know, we look at the word success, and I guess this goes back to defining our terms again, right? And success is very contextual in nature. In other words, depending upon the context or circumstance, it can be defined different ways. For example, on a very basic level, success could be as simple as accomplishing a goal. If you had as a goal to lose 20 pounds in 3 months, and you lost 20 pounds in 3 months, you were successful. If you lost 19 pounds, you were 95% successful, if my math is correct. Success could also mean or be in the context of winning a ball game. One team wins, they were successful. The other team that lost, well, they weren't successful in terms of the win, but perhaps they were successful in terms of playing better than they had the last time. Then you have, Earl Nightingale, the great modern father, I guess you could say, of personal development. I loved his definition of success, the progressive realization of a worthwhile dream or goal. Mm-hmm. In other words, as far as Mr. Nightingale was concerned, just progressing toward that goal, that worthwhile goal, was success in and of itself. Now, of course, part of that goal had to be worthwhile, right? In other words, being the top drug dealer on your block or in your neighborhood—that's not a worthwhile dream or goal. So it had to be that. But being the number one rated professor at a college, that would be a very worthwhile goal. So in other words, it there's the context there. Now, on a bit more of a wide level, if you will, I would define success as that feeling of genuine happiness or peace of mind based on having done one's best in living up to their potential.
Right.
So in other words, to the degree we have lived up to our potential, we were successful. So really one can define it however they want. Now, this was a business book, in a sense, a business parable, yet the principles go across the board. So whether we're talking about success in terms of financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, those are all important areas. So we have John David Mann, my awesome co-author, and I had put it into five basic principles or laws, and they were the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. And to give a Reader's Digest version, I guess, of the laws, law number one says that the law of value says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, this can sound a bit counterintuitive at first. It's not that you're it sounds like you're not making a profit, right? Give more in value than you take in payment. All this means is understanding the difference between price and value.
Right.
Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, that brings so much worth to someone that they will willingly exchange their money for it, which is the essence of a free market-based exchange, they willingly exchange their money for it and are ecstatic that they did while you make a very healthy profit. Alan mentioned having been in the insurance business. So let's say one of his salespeople helps the customer own a policy. Well, that person is paying a certain amount of money, a monthly premium, monthly investment, and yet what are they getting as a result in value? They are getting security. They're getting peace of mind. They understand that no matter what happens, they are going to be covered. Their family is never going to be out in the street. They're always going to be able to eat. They're also, depending upon the type of policy, building for a very sound financial future. This is simply the intrinsic value of the policy, mm-hmm. Never mind the additional value of the salesperson who's always providing what we call the five elements of value: excellence, consistency, attention, mm-hmm. empathy, appreciation. So what this insurance professional has done is provide much more to this person in value than what this person is paying. Mm-hmm. So both parties win. The salesperson and the insurance company make a very healthy profit for providing exceptional value above and beyond what the person's paying as a price. And Alan also made a great point earlier when he said the other party comes away a winner. Yes, both parties. And that's also the essence of a free market-based exchange. Both parties come away better off than they were before the transaction. So that's the law of value, basically how it works. I'll be shorter in the other ones. The law of compensation simply says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives you touch with the exceptional value you provide, the more money with which you'll be rewarded. Law number three, the law of influence, says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Again, this sounds counterproductive, right? But maybe even Pollyanna-ish. And yet when you look at the greatest leaders, the top influencers, the most profitable salespeople, this is simply how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always looking, as Sam in the story, one of the mentors in the story told Joe the protege, they're always looking to make their win about the other person's win.
Right.
But again, there's nothing doormatty about this. It doesn't mean you're a martyr or you're self-sacrificial. It simply means you understand that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust, and that there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by genuinely, authentically placing their interest first. We go into the next law, the law of authenticity, which says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. One of the other mentors in the story, Deborah, shares how one of the most important lessons she learned was that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they all are, and they are all indeed important, they're all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core.
Right.
And this means really tapping in to who you are and showing up that way. And then law number five, the law of receptivity, says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. It means not only do we breathe out, we also have to breathe in as well. And despite the negative messages about money and success and all the things we hear from the world, the media, the people around us, and the lack consciousness that just fills the airwaves and fills the world. The fact is, to the degree we live in a free market-based society, you can only become wealthy and prosperous by serving others, by providing value to others. So giving and receiving are not opposite concepts. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem. It's not, am I a giver or a receiver? It's, I'm a giver and a receiver. However, what we need to know is where the focus goes, right? And this comes full circle to what we were talking about earlier. You need to focus on the giving of value.
Right.
You focus on the giving, right? And then allow the receiving.
That was fantastic. Now, the audience and, everybody listening, I mean, that was worth its weight in gold. And I can tell you, just in that one section alone, I hope everybody was taking notes, because I certainly was. And that's just something that, having Bob on, we knew the genius was going to, come on. Again, I could listen to you all day, Bob, and talk to you all day. And, I know that the listeners can get tremendous value, and you've got a lot of events and things that you put on and are a part of. And that's fantastic. Now, you can go to Burg.com. BURG.com and connect with Bob in many ways. See what's going on. Buy his book, The Go Giver. We just got a tremendous amount of information from that book. And, one concept that we put together, Bob, is we come up with an idea around one bold move. Something you can leave the audience with. As we fade out in this show, and we definitely, by the way, we want you back on in 2016 and recap some of the things you've got going on, and I know your book and everything else you've got. But one bold move that you can leave everybody with, on this show specifically today, where it's some food for thought. It's something to ponder and think about.
Well, in a sense, I think it's always looking for ways you can add value to other people's lives, and it doesn't have to be just in the business sense. It can be with anyone. And this is something that I really hope I have picked up from my dad, from watching him for all these years, and that is to look for ways to make people feel genuinely good about themselves. And, you know, when you can do that, not only is it the best thing you can do for others, it's the best thing you can do for yourself as well. And I think when we operate from that foundation, good things happen.
Well, you heard it, folks, and you made me actually have a chill there because, you know, you're making me feel good about myself right now, Bob. So, again, mission accomplished.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, again, for being here. We always appreciate, you know, you taking some time out. And one thing, just so, you know, we want you to know, we've got a badge coming your way. You're an expert alumni, part of the Think Bold, Be Bold team, and we've got a big event. You know, we didn't talk about this prior or, you know, any part of this show, but we've got a big event coming in 2016, Bob, and you're going to be absolutely a VIP at our event, and we're going to let you know a lot of information. And we've been teasing everybody, just so you know, we haven't announced this completely yet, but sometime in January we'll have a lot more details. But I wanted to put that out there so you know, and we'll be sending you some information behind the scenes. And certainly, you know, this badge that we want you part of that alumni, and you are because you're on the show, and we really appreciate everything that you've given. So we're going to get your word out there and your message and your book and all the things that you're doing because, again, you know, that whole part about giving and receiving is just such a, you know, big part of this week, even, you know, with the holidays and all of that. And we just talked about, you know, that on our last show around what time of year this is, and having you recap sort of 2015 for everybody and getting them set up for 2016. It's just an exciting pleasure. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the show today. You know, and I know.
Thank you. I've been honored to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. So again, thanks, Bob. We appreciate you coming on Think Bold, Be Bold. And everybody out there, you know, have a happy holiday season. We'll have just a small break, and we'll be back again next week. We have some more awesome guests coming on. And Alan, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Bob, you're wonderful, man. Thanks for giving us your time.
Thank you so much, Alan.
And it wouldn't be a show without me saying, do something nice for someone today.